It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio as usual on another glorious Saturday morning. And when we get out of here, Adam's going to take a little road trip down and do some outdoor soccer stuff with his daughter. It'd be, what a day for that.
Yeah, it's really beautiful just, out.
We are on a tear around here weather-wise, and I just hope it keeps up. So, anyway, for all the regulars, welcome back. Glad you're always there. That's why we keep showing up. And if you're new to the show and heard about it somewhere or whatever, then stick around for the hour. We'll promise that you'll learn something inadvertently, if nothing else, because we'll be talking about all kinds of stuff today. There are sort of two dominating topics in the country right now. One of them is political, and you got all kinds of experts out there 7 days a week to talk about that one, and the other one is financial, and it has to do with what's going on with the dollar. And I know it's on everybody's mind because we've had so many inquiries about it, and we will get into that and tell you our version of exactly how much you should be concerned and why panic is never going to do you any good. But anybody who wants to discuss that topic, I'm not going to hold myself out as a monetary expert. I know a lot of economics, but I'm not an international finance monetary expert, and neither is Adam. That's not what we do. But we understand the fundamentals of what's going on out there. And quite frankly, it's not very pretty.
No.
Now, what is pretty, I'll let you talk about, because yeah, that's the market this past week.
The market this week was very pretty, and a bumpy, kind of a bumpy first quarter came to an end on Friday, where this is actually our first show of the second quarter of 23. Yep. Hard to believe, but it's true. And the first quarter didn't feel great at all.
No, it didn't.
But I looked at the numbers, and it actually kind of was.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a pleasant surprise. The worst performing sector of last year turned in a 21.6% up quarter, and that was technology. So almost unbelievable.
Hear the sound of that bull snorting out there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bull market. Yeah. Exactly.
In like, the NASDAQ, it is.
Crazy.
Who'd have thought?
Not me. That was followed closely by communication services, which was another dud from last year. It turned in a 21.1% quarter. Both pretty amazing.
Yep.
QQQ, which a lot of people hold as a technology proxy. It's not a pure technology fund, but it holds a ton of technology. It turned in a 20.7% quarter, and it was up 9.5% in just March, which is a pretty amazing month. All of that was going on well, we had a quote-unquote banking crisis happening, so pretty incredible. Outside of the NASDAQ and technology, the results were still positive, but not quite as much. The S&P added 7% this quarter, while the Dow was basically flat. Remember last year, though, the Dow was down just 8.8% compared to the NASDAQ down 33.1%. So we're probably looking at a bit of reversion to the mean here. And that was sort of the overarching the feel of the quarter. Anything that was terrible last year did well this quarter. So
it's the best argument ever for diversifying your portfolio.
Completely.
If anybody tell me that on January 1, they would give me an accurate prediction of what the first quarter was going to be, I would have laughed in their face and hung up.
Actually, it's an even better argument for rebalancing.
So, that it is too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anything that true. Has gone up, you sell off a little bit and put it in the things that have gone down, and it tends to over the long run, when you see these mean reversion periods in the market, it will really benefit you.
A little quick funny on the side, sort of funny. Anybody out there who knows the name Michael Burry, or if you've seen the movie The Big Short, mm-hmm. It's about him. He issued a mea culpa. One of my pet peeves has long been that all these guys are out there in the 24/7, 365 media, and they never, ever get held to account for what they say. And Burry didn't get held to it. He gave it up himself, because on January 31, he put out a single word of advice to everybody and said, sell.
I think it was a tweet that he sent out.
Probably a tweet, yeah. It said, sell. So here it is. One line says it all. I was wrong to say sell. There you go. So thank you, Mr. Burry. That is one of the most magnanimous things I have ever found among all of the media superstars.
Obviously, he's not a politician.
Obviously not.
Within the S&P over the quarter, there was a pretty big disparity within the sectors. The results were really widely mixed. The worst performing sector was financials, no real surprise there, but it was only down 5.5%, which isn't really too bad considering what happened during the quarter. Yep. Energy, healthcare, and utilities were also negative, while there were three other sectors that were up over 16%. So that's between the 20-plus percent to negative 5.5, that was the disparity just within the sectors of the S&P. Outside of the U.S., there were some really big gains as well. Mexico led the way, gaining 20% for the quarter. And we did some research on this during the week. And despite the drug cartel-fueled headlines, Mexico has quietly been benefiting from the Trump-era USMCA policy and China's sort of not being able to get out of their own way recently with the lockdowns and the aggressive behavior on the world stage. A lot of manufacturing has actually been shifting towards Mexico that used to be done in China, and I think that is the reason that their market is doing so well. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, when you look at the old NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, that I was for in the 90s, I was a strong supporter because the laissez-faire type personality would say, let every country do what it does best.
Yeah.
But the problem with it that we didn't know for a long time was on its face, it was good, but it wasn't fair. That was a bad word. It was a very lopsided anti-American free trade agreement. That's why it failed. Well, Trump came back in, and one of the things he ran on, if you all remember, was renegotiating NAFTA. And he did, and now it's a very fair agreement. All three of the major countries on the Northern American hemisphere or continent, they have all benefited from it and still are. So if you want to say something else that Trump accomplished that doesn't get a lot of press, that's a big one.
It's pretty interesting too, because Mexico is a place that could, if they decided, I think everything follows the money. So if the money starts shifting towards manufacturing and away from drugs, and they decide they want to get the drug cartels under control, Mexico could really have a boom. I mean, they have the tourism, the beauty, the beaches, and if they could get this manufacturing business to continue to thrive there, you could see a real turnaround there.
If it's true that the migration from Central America, South America, and others is largely based on people seeking opportunity to improve their lifestyle by working, Mexico could absorb a lot of what's coming over our border
Definitely.
Right now, because the opportunity to grow and prosper in Mexico is expanding like crazy, and maybe this whole thing will work despite our politicians. You never know.
You never know.
Anyway, we got a lot more. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we should, I guess, bring up our trivia question, which, as usual, is brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. And you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. I've got about six of them that I really want to do, and I'm having trouble deciding which one. But I think maybe I'll stick with one of the ones that got me from the first day I was doing radio. Everybody of a certain age remembers growing up with General Electric. Ronald Reagan was the spokesman, and they had the TV and all that. So it was literally a household word, as was he. And then along came a guy named Jack Welch, who took over I guess he was CEO of the company. And he sort of compartmentalized and put the right people in charge of everything, and GE grew like a weed, and it peaked at about $600 billion in market cap. But it has fallen on hard times.
Mm-hmm.
Welch retired right before 9/11, and it was 9/11 and other things, plus the appointment of a very, can I say inept?
I would go, I think that's too nice.
I'm thinking maybe, so I'll compromise on inept.
Okay.
He took over the company, and
the only thing he ever got wrong was his succession plan.
Well, you know what? Exactly.
Yeah.
I think Immelt was very much like people working in the administration today. They actually have delusions of adequacy. And he really thought he was God's gift. So he was sitting on the Jobs Council during the Obama administration while he was outsourcing tens of thousands of jobs to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the way it's done. Do you think I have a point here? Because I got to ask a question sooner or later.
Go for it.
It's recovering somewhat now. How low did the market cap get for GE from its peak of $600 billion back in about 2000?
Yep.
How low? A number of billions of dollars.
This was yet another case, too, that not the only thing that went wrong, but one of the major things was an underfunded pension plan. And he hid that from the media and from investors and from analysts. He's a real scumbag.
Yeah. And if you want to turn off a bunch of shareholders and watch some selling take place, just hide a few billion from an underfunded pension plan.
Yep. And he had, it came down to Immelt and a sort of a family friend of ours, mm-hmm. Who ended up running Home Depot. So, and amongst
Chrysler,
some
other stuff. Exactly. I think he's part of Cerberus still, isn't he?
I don't know where he is now. I see him on one thing,
he's not got a cash flow problem.
No.
You see him all the time. If you watch the business stations,
Bob Nardelli is
on quite frequently, very well respected. I believe that GE would be a different company, would have been for the last 20-odd years.
Oh, there's no
doubt.
Had
they given that job to Bob.
No doubt about it.
And, you know, as you said, it's kind of an old family friend, and therefore we're probably not 100% unbiased. But I guarantee you one thing, he wouldn't have been as bad as Immelt.
I worked for him at Home Depot for a while, too, and not directly under him, but he was the CEO while I was there. And man, did they hate him there too, though.
He was the first non-family CEO, and he set out to do something that was just unheard of at the time, run it like a business.
Yeah. It was very unpopular with the employees, but it ended up being the right thing for the company.
He tripled sales and tripled profits in his tenure there.
Yep. And then they fired him.
Then they fired him, yeah.
Crazy.
What can you say?
Yep.
Oh, and during that time, the stock went down.
Right.
So in case anybody thinks their capital asset pricing model is flawless, you got to factor in a personality once in a while.
No doubt about it. This is why we don't pick stocks.
That's one of the main ones, a lesson learned by both of us very well. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up some things going on in the market.
Yeah, actually, I have quite a bit more. It was an interesting week. Outside of Mexico, France, Germany, Italy, and Spain all had double-digit returns over the quarter. The only negatives I could find were India, Hong Kong, Israel, and Brazil. Kind of a random assortment there. A couple of emerging markets. But overall, emerging markets were actually up a decent amount, about 4% during the quarter. And the world index, excluding the U.S., was up almost 7%. So pretty much on par with the S&P. Mm-hmm. It's been a good run in international. We've been upping our percentage over the last year, and it's kind of paid off recently, so that's been a good thing. Commodities would have had a decent quarter without the price of natural gas imploding. It was down over 50% in the first quarter of this year
after tanking last year.
Oil was off just over 5%, and the overall commodities index was off only 3.7%. So obviously some of the other commodities did quite well, gold being one of them. It rallied by 8%, and silver was up 15% in March, so it ended the quarter just slightly positive. It was kind of a wild ride for silver during the quarter, too.
If we had a national energy policy that was worth anything, the price of natural gas would be skyrocketing again. The demand for it should be out of sight.
I'm okay with it staying low. That's fine
too.
With me.
But you know, if you want to complain about natural gas being dirty, which the current administration does, you're missing the whole point.
Yeah, it's supposed to be it was just not long ago the clean replacement for other forms of whatever.
And ours is 30% cleaner than Russia's.
The bond market also got in on the rally over the quarter because interest rates finally dropped a bit. The aggregate bond market, the total bond market, was up about 3.25%. and the majority of that gain came in March. TLT, which is the long treasury ETF, it got hammered last year. It was down at one point more than the NASDAQ. It's up 7% this year.
That's respectable.
It is. I've been wary of getting into it, although I know it's bound to go up eventually, but it's still, I don't know that we've seen the end of rate hikes yet. We're getting closer.
The biggest question sitting out there is further interest rate hikes or no. And you can read an article on any opinion you want on that. And the truth of the matter is that we don't know.
No doubt. We saw a bit of relief from inflation this week when the PCE came out. It rose just 0.3%. It was less than the 0.4%. That was what was expected. And it was actually up 0.5% last month. So lower than expected inflation news, especially on the PCE, which is the one that the Fed follows.
Right. It's similar to the consumer price index, but the Fed believes it's a better harbinger of things for people.
Seeing that come in lower than expected, though, gives Powell some fuel to pause rate hikes. So
that was produced by the BEA, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, rather than the Department of Labor, too. So I'm kind of glad to have two offsetting ways to do it. They remind each other, they resemble each other. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
But the one that makes the difference because of the Fed is the PCE, and that was the one that dropped a little bit. It's good news.
One article I read this morning is predicting that the CPI, that's the other measure of inflation, it should reach the 2-3% range by June if the Fed does nothing going forward.
I saw that.
And
we have been saying that for a long time. The Fed should stop doing something and sit back and let their own policies work in the marketplace.
They haven't called to ask our opinion yet, though.
It's just incredible to me.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Ian, they might have my old landline, and I canceled it. So that's probably it.
You had that thing for 40 years.
So. Yeah, right. I can't think of another reason they wouldn't have called yet.
So last thing I had was home prices are officially falling, according to the Case-Shiller Index. So you mentioned last week that that was the best measure of home prices. They are officially falling, but not in Florida. Miami and Tampa are the two cities that are covered by the index. Miami was the only city in the index that saw prices rise month over month from this month to last.
And not just a little.
Hold on, I have it. Give me a minute.
Sure.
And it had the largest increase year over year.
Yeah.
Tampa was slightly negative month over month, but had the second highest year over year growth.
Right.
Guess what city fell the most last year?
San Francisco.
How'd you know and why?
Well, I've read the article.
Oh, okay.
But two, I would have guessed that anyway.
Why do you think that is?
I can't imagine.
Could it be because it's turned into a dystopian? Never mind.
Yeah.
It dropped 7.6% year over year, and I don't think you've seen the last of home prices falling in that city.
You start talking about reparations. And the baseline has moved from $350,000 to $5 million.
No, that's not enough now.
No, it's not enough.
Right.
And you want to make some serious money, folks? Rent a few U-Hauls and take them out to San Francisco and drop them there. And they and will pay you for...
They'll be stolen within 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's that.
File insurance claim? Where are you going with that?
There you go. No, the U-Haul company will pay you to drive them out there.
Okay.
Because they can charge so much for them coming back out.
So Miami month over month wasn't up very much. It was up 0.09%, but year over year up 13.8%. So pretty solid growth. And since post-COVID, it has the second largest gain next to Tampa at 60.44, where Tampa is up 60.99. So splitting hairs there, but the two largest gains in the index are both Florida cities. Go figure.
Fundamental economics, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
Our demand is rising. Our supply is rising slower. Guess what? Angela was just saying on the show preceding ours that the inventory around here has dropped from 7,000 for sale to 5,700 just since November.
Wow.
Yeah, and here we're going into the spring buying season.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
We don't have much inventory. So if anybody's thinking of selling right now, what an idea. If you're thinking of buying, you better be prepared.
I have met so many people that just moved here in the past month. It's really crazy. I feel like every other person I meet is from somewhere within the last year or two.
Yeah, and if you're a local looking to buy a house, you better remember that the people coming in here think prices are cheap.
Yeah, it's true.
Don't get it in your head that you're going to go out and get a tremendous bargain right now, but it will turn out to be a tremendous bargain
10 years even from at, now.
Yeah, because sure. That this demand is not going away. It has more to do than with anything than just weather or just politics. Just a great place to live. So anyway, we got to take another break and we'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we still have that trivia question sitting out there from its glory days around 2000 when GE had a market cap of about $600 billion, excuse me. It fell how far recently? To what low level, and that hasn't been a terribly long time ago. So $600 billion dropped to what billion? And you've got to get it fairly close, not dead center, but whatever. Okay, we've been inundated with inquiries lately about the dollar, the reserve currency.
Yeah, it's really been a hot topic.
It really has. And it's because after a long, long period of working on this, China and Russia got together and cut a deal for a big energy deal.
It's almost like they're not afraid of us anymore.
It's almost like that,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody understands, which I know a lot of you do, but how did we get our status first? Well, actually, in 1914, after the Federal Reserve Bank was created, which was, in my opinion, one of the darkest periods in the history of the United States. You all know my feelings on that. And if you want to read up on why, I highly recommend the book Creature from Jekyll Island by Griffin, who lays it out in very much detail. Anyway, since then, we started printing dollars in 1914. And that there trade during the war, the First World War, was done with a lot of gold. Now, gold's a great trading device, but it's pretty inflexible because it's heavy and on and on. So instead of doing the actual trading in war, the currencies of the world started trading, and we had the gold standard. We had the world's largest supply of gold, and we pegged our dollar to that gold. So a transaction would go like this. Russia would have to buy a bunch of dollars or produce a bunch of oil, and then China, if they wanted to buy them, would have to either buy the dollar, or if they were the producer, they would do that. But let's say China's a buyer and Russia's a seller. So Russia has to accept payment for that giant energy deal, and China pays in what we called the reserve currency, meaning the U.S. dollar, because that was pegged to gold and everybody knew it had value. The buyer, in this case Russia, would have to then sell the dollars for rubles, and whatever they netted out receiving for it was all based on the dollar. This happened in New Hampshire in 1944, I think, when the biggest currencies and biggest countries in the world declared the dollar the world's reserve currency, meaning international trade would be settled in dollars. Well, that, as you might expect, created a lot of demand for dollars because there's a lot of things going on around the world trade-wise. So the Fed started cranking out dollars until they sort of figured out one day that Richard Nixon was an idiot, and they convinced him to get off of the gold standard that we had used forever and ever. And when that happens and you start floating the value of the dollar, the purchasing power of that dollar is no longer worth what it was. This has been going on for a long time in several different steps, and it has created a situation where we have become so powerful, but the citizens of the country have not become that powerful. Country, yes. Citizens, no. And the reason is that the purchasing power of the dollar has fallen in 110 years by over 96%. That is due to the Federal Reserve creating paper, electronic, just creating dollars out of nowhere with nothing to back it up. Used to be, if you created $1 billion, you had to have $1 billion worth of gold. Not anymore. So now nobody will even tell you anymore that, well, nobody will tell you the truth, how much gold we actually have. I know we have Fort Knox, but nobody knows what's in it, and they won't let you do that. And I know that several basement levels down in the New York Federal Reserve Bank, there's a lot of gold in that one too. And there are various other stashes around the world. There's a big one in London and on and on. And that's really pretty much irrelevant because now gold is gold and dollars are dollars and never the twain shall meet. So the companies of the world have been jealous of the dollar. I don't think there's a better way to put it, including China. And what came out of this whole thing with the devaluation of the dollar and the delinking from gold was the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, two other institutions that in my world would not exist, but they don't live in my world. I live in theirs, so they do. And they've been trying to get a piece of the action in international trade. And by they, I mean China, Russia, so on and so forth. Well, they created years ago something called the SDR, which stands for Special
Depository?
No, I just
dollar?
Slipped it. Special drawing rights. Now, special drawing rights can be used for international transactions instead of pure dollars, and they include a great number of dollars in there. But there's also some yuans in there, renminbi, if you can say it in China, but you don't have to because it's the same thing, yuan. Well, China got a little involved that way. And they started immediately shoring up their own reserves. What does that mean? They've been buying gold like there's no tomorrow. They've been buying gold. And then the big banks, including the Chinese banks, started to manipulate gold and silver. So what they would do is they would buy, and as the price started to rise, they would then slam the door shut. First off, they were, especially silver, they were able to name the price of silver twice a day in London, a group of seven guys. The Silver Price Review Board or something like that. So they'd tell you in the morning what it was worth. They'd tell you in the afternoon. Well, all that's now gone. So the price is negotiable for gold and silver. But China wants more of the action. So they've been buying gold so that, the sole reason, so that people started to trust the yuan's value like they always have trusted the dollar's value. Well, finally, some things started to happen, and I don't mean this week, and I don't mean a couple of days ago. Probably 10 years ago, that's an approximate, there was business being done between Iran and India for oil, and they were paying in rupees. And that went around the dollar, but it wasn't a real big international transaction, but it was the proverbial camel's nose under the tent. Well, it's gotten worse and worse, and people are joining up all around the world. And it's come to light now that people have been talking about BRICS for a long time, BRIC. And that came up in the world of finance and investing when we started getting into these emerging economies having value. And that Brazil, Russia, India, China deal now has started really making headroads into eliminating the dollar as the reserve currency. Well, this week we saw a big deal cut, and everybody now wants to jump on the BRIC bandwagon. And there are a lot of them, Argentina and several more, who would just dearly love to get rid of the dollar, because so many countries around the world have turned into socialist pukocracies or something like that.
I don't think that's a word.
It is now. Just made it up. And anyway, there is a big clamoring now to stop using the dollar as a reserve currency. without going into all the complexities, let's look at that simple thing that came up in the first segment called supply and demand. The supply of dollars has never been excessive until recently because we've been printing so many of them.
40%.
Yeah. That's 40% of the dollars have been printed since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can imagine how many dollars that is if you think about the world supply of dollars. Well, all of a sudden, China doesn't have to buy all these dollars in order to purchase Russian oil. They just send their own currency over there. Well, that means that the demand for dollars has been greatly reduced. Now, let's go back to what the Fed's been doing. The Feds have been funneling money into, even long before COVID, they've been funneling a lot of money into the economy, both here and around the world. There are persistent reports that are very difficult to prove by anybody, unless you do a lot of research, that they have sent about $15 trillion during the financial crisis in 08 to banks around the world for shoring up their reserves. Now, that in itself would be inflationary if those dollars did anything but sit in their bank vaults. A dollar with no velocity, zero times whatever is zero. So that in itself did not create inflation. But now, as they start pulling those dollars out of their reserves and start using them, the velocity of that money is perking up again. And that's happening all around the world. What that means is more and more money chasing fewer and fewer goods relatively. In order to prevent inflation, we have to get that money supply down. Well, the Fed, to their credit, has been doing that for quite some time now. And if you look at the winding down of the money supply in the last couple of months, it has been quite remarkable. But the problem is, in the absence of demand from around the world, it is a drop in the bucket. And it's not going to make enough difference. So when too many dollars chase too few goods, the net result is what? Inflation. If it gets too big, too fast, the net result is hyperinflation. Can we avoid hyperinflation forever? I'm not going to answer that question because I don't know. I just wish there were smarter people trying to do it. A little more on this afterwards, and we'll get on to more pleasant things. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder of the trivia question. GE fell from its lofty perch of $600 billion in a market cap down to what fairly recently? I got a couple phone calls coming up. A couple of quick things. Adam wants to do a little quick PSA for Joe Strong.
Yeah, if you haven't been listening, this is the our charity golf tournament that Joe was a friend of ours, child who was taken by cancer. My wife and Joe's mom basically started this charity, and we're throwing the third annual Joe 13 Golf Classic. And it's at Queens Harbor on May 7th. I believe there's already 90-some people registered out of a total of 100. We're almost sold out already. It's not till May 7th, but it's at Queens Harbor. It's going to be a great event. If you're a golfer and you want to support a great cause, all the proceeds go to the Mulligan Lab at St. Jude's Research Hospital, which is doing research into the exact type of leukemia that took Joe. So great event, a lot of fun. Please come out and register if you're a golfer.
Great. And one from me, a very special happy birthday today to Apple Computer Company.
Okay.
Which was started on this day in 1976 by three people, Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Ronald Wayne. Not exactly a household word, that one.
Nope.
He didn't last too long. He sold his founder's shares back to the Steves. In today's dollars, he received, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
$10,932, or $53, I'm sorry. $10,953.
That hurts.
He's still alive, and he admits in his lifetime now that to have made a few mistakes in his life. Sorry. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Well, I had two things. Now I've got three things.
Okay.
So I'm going to take a stab at the question about GE. I'm going to say about $180 billion.
Interesting, but too high.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wow. All right. The other thing is a quick story. When I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, of all places, I had the opportunity to meet Steve Wozniak.
Oh, cool.
At the gas pumps at the Lark gas station in Los Gatos, California.
I'll be darned.
And it was, yeah, and he was, well, because we lived there, everyone knew who he was,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who he is. And I have to say, while I don't agree with him politically, he did donate a lot of his money to the local high school there in Los Gatos.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting, I knew who he was, but I didn't say I knew who he was. And we started talking about this traffic ticket that he had gotten in Las Vegas. He was, according to the highway patrol, he was doing 104 miles an hour in his Prius. And him being an engineer, had figured out that that's impossible. And he had, you know, so he fought the case. And so I was talking to him about that particular ticket. While he was at the gas pump, he's kind of an interesting guy. He had, I'll never forget this, he had food on his shirt, and he was pumping his own gas, and if you didn't know who he was, if you were from out of town and just fell off the moon or something, you would think he was just a local hippie, actually.
It's funny.
But,
yeah.
But it's interesting your discussion about the dollar, because this morning I was talking to my sister about the very same subject, and I had told her my concerns. I told her that I was thinking about maybe starting to invest in some commodities, but I agree with you about the dollar, and you know about how a trend is beginning with these different countries starting to wean themselves off the dollar. And when when a trend begins, it tends to accelerate.
Yep.
Either accelerates or implodes.
Right.
It could go either way.
Well, I don't think we've even gotten close to it. Usually imploding happens after there's an acceleration.
Right.
Yeah. It just, my point just being that, one out of every, whatever companies are successful and they accelerate, the rest kind of fold in on themselves. And I don't know which way this will go. It right now it looks like it's accelerating. I agree with you. I'm not convinced that that will be the new world order 10 years from now. I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Well, I differ a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'd like to hear why you think that, but basically I think that you're seeing a reshuffling of the new world order.
Maybe.
And I think currency has a lot to do with it. And I think, I don't see our country in a very, and you guys have known this about my thoughts. I haven't felt that the country was on a very good path. And I think, we've seen more of that this week, especially with what happened to the indictment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel and believe that I thought we were crossing the Rubicon at the last election. Now I'm hearing some people say that this is the Rubicon. I don't know. It's all going to come down to what happens in the next major election. But I do think that the inflation that you talked about is going to occur. I think that the countries are going to, monkey see, monkey do. They're going to follow one another into trying to get into these agreements. It's going to put more and more dollars into circulation, which is going to cause inflation.
Yep.
And I believe it'll lead to hyperinflation. And history is kind of showing what happens to that. And that is that we start having, world war. We'll have a world war. We see problems with China. China is testing us. They're becoming more aggressive. Russia is not backing down. In their quest, we have Iran, North Korea. I don't want to say the relation, but I know someone high up in the Air Force, and the word they're using is world war, and you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's grim. I'm grim. I don't want to be grim because I'm naturally optimistic, but I'm also pragmatic.
Yeah,
and I don't.
You have to remember too that the 70s gave us the 80s, so mm-hmm. This is not. And there are times in that the country has gone in a direction that none of us talking right now are a big fan of, like now. But there's usually a pretty harsh rebound from it, and these things tend to swing the other way. And I don't disagree with anything that you said. I guess I'm just a bit more optimistic about the outcome.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say is this, and I've mentioned this once before on your radio show. In 1968, Ronald Reagan gave a speech, A Time for Choosing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This, how many years later, almost 60 years later, nearly 60 years later, if you listen to that speech, and it's on YouTube, and you really listen to the speech, you realize that the choice has not been made, was not made when he suggested that there was a time for choosing.
I agree. We've got to watch it. I need to run because I've got another call I have to take.
Okay.
But we can continue this in subsequent shows. I appreciate the call, and I sincerely hope you're dead wrong, but you're not.
Yeah. So thanks for the call, Greg.
Good morning, Marshall.
Hey, guys, I know you're short for time.
Yeah, a little bit, but don't worry about it.
I have been listening to Thomas Sowell and realizing I need to study a lot more because I'm a pretty ignorant person.
I would disagree with that.
He encapsulates so well why on economic item. And that brings me to my question for y'all. Could you possibly put on your blog some suggested reading on why with respect to inflation and why there are certain things that are good as a hedge towards inflation as we try to be balanced, et cetera? I know we all have been looking at precious metals and going, why haven't they been going up until very, very recently?
Because they're manipulated. So, that's a simple answer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I think that would be some good items to put on your blog because
I'll give you a
we
book.
All could use some
I'll give you a book
education.
To read if you want to get a good head start. Milton Friedman.
Okay.
Milton Friedman's Monetary Mischief.
Monetary Mischief.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. I'm looking it up as we hang up.
All right. Wonderful. Do you want to take
Thank
a quick
all.
Shot at the trivia before it's over here?
How about $130
billion? Too high. I'm just going to give it out because we don't have time to take any more anyway. It dropped to $48 billion from $600.
Wow. Good job, Mr. ML.
No kidding.
Really solid.
Now, the other half of the story, the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say, it's currently about 100.